Welcome to Minority Corner
with Aneke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
I'm back in the intro this week. What?
First of all, we got Aneke back. She is
here.
Good to have you. Aneke, it was rough without you last week.
You know what? You pulled it through. What are you talking about?
Aneke, I gave a little teaser into my new foray onto prep, and I thought, let's have a conversation. Let's play all the cards on the table.
Yes.
What is prep?
Deal 'em.
What is the debate?
Yes.
Who is into it? Who is not into it? And what is going on with prep?
I'm into that.
Prep it up.
So we're on my corner. We're going to continue the trend of protecting yourself with protecting yourself from the internet. Yeah.
That's okay.
It's another Library Corner with Aneke, and this time we're going to be talking about native advertisements.
Ooh,
what are they? How are they changing the landscape of journalism? All that good stuff.
Ooh, I know it's going to be good. I can't wait. So, girl, why don't we strap it on and get on over? Well, okay.
Okay.
Why don't we just go to the corner?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. With your strap on or not, it's up to you.
It's your choice.
Okay, surprise me.
It is another week.
It is another week. Oh, lady.
Yes.
Lady B.
Hello, how Girl, are you, James?
I am feeling fine. You want to know why?
Why?
No terrorists blew me up today.
I know, you sent me that thing. I had been blissfully unaware. And then you're like, I was like, hey, do you want to record today? How are you? And you're like, I'm great. I didn't die. I didn't get blown up. And I was like, what?
That's a victory.
It is.
I was minding my own business at the gym, and it was just like explosion at Port Authority. I'm like, today's been such a beautiful day. And then find out, and then I did some research. And apparently, at least at this time on Monday.
Yes.
The guy only injured a few people, and he mainly injured himself. Like it went off wrong.
Oh, wow.
Or whatnot. And it just, for me, I'm like, what a win and victory. Like, I feel
right.
like
nobody died.
Yeah. What a great day. Terrorist attack did not go down. And like, cause like I was just at Port Authority. It was in the Port Authority subway station. I was there yesterday.
Wow.
Leaving my dance class.
Dang.
So, you know,
it's so easy to be in the same spot as something happening.
So yeah, it's like you're in New York City, you know.
New York, I'm glad that you're doing okay. I'm sad for the people that got injured, but you know what?
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're alive.
Yes, me too. And so that, to me, it's like anytime that happens, it's just like a reminder of just like, life is so precious.
Cherish it.
You know,
cherish
it, cherish the moments.
Mm-hmm.
Say fuck you to the bullshit, because there's just so much bullshit we all just get so caught up in.
Yes.
So just like, whatever. Every moment that you're not blown up is a winning victory.
I agree.
But you,
yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
How you doing?
I'm doing really good. I went to I wanted to talk to you about this show that I went to a couple days
ago. What you done see?
Okay, so Bill Murray, I've always been kind of a sideline big fan of Bill Murray. Like I think his humor is kind of dry and funny. I like his stuff with Wes Anderson. Like,
he had me at What About Bob? That to me is my, am I alone on this?
That's
favorite movie of his. It's so good. He is so crazy as Bob in that movie.
Yeah. So randomly Andrew found tickets for this show that he's doing. I guess he's like trying to be like a avant-garde performer now. So him and this cellist decided to create a show where there's a violinist, a cellist, and a piano player, and they play classical music and standards, and Bill Murray reads from excerpts of books. Plays.
Is he also like painting in the background?
He tango dances at one point.
Oh,
and
my
he sings.
God.
He sings.
Yes.
He does like a medley of all of West Side Story songs.
Look at, like, I can't wait when I'm in my old age. This is the shit I get to do, and people just tolerate it.
No. Because
he's, like, everyone's grandpa.
No.
Oh, wait, no?
So here's there's a couple of things that I want to talk about with this show. First of all, the audience is the number one reason. Well, not the number one reason. Number one reason I want to talk to you about it. But then there's a number one minority corner reason that I wanted to talk to you about.
Ooh, okay, all right. Okay. I want to hear both of these.
So number one reason I wanted to talk to you about was because the audience was cray. And as a performer, I know that you're going to be like, what the fuck. So the mix of the audience with people who like highbrow entertainment, like, you know, symphony and stuff like that. So a lot of people in scarves, a lot of opera glasses. But then there's a lot of people that were coming for Bill Murray. So people wearing like shirts that have Bill Murray's face on it.
Totally. Yeah. So, it's like a Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
It's two worlds colliding.
5 minutes into the show, classical music playing, Bill Murray's reading something. I forget who the excerpt was from, but it was like Foucault or something, right?
Oh, Lord.
Somebody, people start to laugh a little bit, but clearly they don't. You're not supposed to laugh at this.
It's yeah, you don't laugh at Foucault.
I mean, there are some funny parts, but this moment was not funny. Dude gets up and he goes, Bill, this fucking sucks.
No way. No way. Okay, I know there's more, but I already have red flags. First of all, you can't do that during a live performance. You sit your ass down, person who's ever been to fucking theater.
I know.
And second of all, you don't do that to motherfucking Bill Murray.
If Bill Murray
wants to, like, bake a cake to Sade and take a poop, you sit down and you shut up and you listen. Because you paid for this. And it's Bill Murray. Of course he's going to do some crazy shit. What did you think he was going to do?
Okay,
greatest hits from What About Bob?
Let me keep going.
Okay. So, oh, God. I can't even
I was
imagine.
In the balcony. So after that happens.
God. Did the guy leave?
Yeah. Like, did he stay there? That as he's leaving. The door slams
shut. And this is like
shut.
5 minutes into
yes!
it? Oh, Lord.
And so I'm in the balcony, and the balcony is crazy. So they have a bar on the upstairs and the downstairs, but that's normal. Like, they have bars at shows all the time. But the audience is a drunk.
Wasted? Oh, my God. And what night of the week is it?
This is like a Friday night.
Okay, all right.
But
I never know with San Franciscans because
true.
Or the Bay Area, they have the most per capita of readers and drinkers, highest rates in
so
the Bay
we
Area.
Don't, you don't know what the fuck you're working with.
You
just
don't.
A bunch of
it could have
drunk,
been a Tuesday
well-read
at 3
people.
O'clock. Any excuse. That guy was probably wasted out of his mind. That's probably what was happening. Or an acid.
So because everybody's wasted, everybody's getting up and down, up and down.
Oh,
it was like a
God.
Sports game. I've never been to a theatrical performance with this many people getting up and down. One guy tumbled over a seat.
Oh,
one lady
God.
Kept laughing out of nowhere. It would be silent and she'd be like, ha, 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 ha. And then people were like,
God.
You couldn't tell if they were heckling or not. People would be like, boo, boo.
What?
Yeah, no. And then at one point he was reading a story where it was like, what do I do with my life or something like that? And somebody yells out, I love rhetorical questions.
Oh my God.
I was
Bay
having
Area.
A panic attack. Okay.
I
know.
Bay
so
Area,
ready?
Get it together.
This is you. I would say it's about 3/4 of the way through, right? It's almost over.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People are rowdy. And one guy is so angry. During a pause,
what?
He goes, shut the fuck up. It's Bill Murray. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's just
that
as disruptive.
It's just as disruptive. Sir, I know you're listening. I feel your pain. I know you're upset. And, like, everybody needs to, like, relearn etiquette. You know what it is? I think people are just so used to watching their Netflix at home and they can just say whatever the fuck they want all the time that people have forgot. Like, millennials are clearly not going to live entertainment enough to know that you can't do this
shit. I know! You can't do this! It's ridiculous. Ugh. Okay, so that...
How did Bill respond? Was he just trying to do his show and just communicate with his celloist and read his quotes?
He was just doing his thing. He just plowed right on through saying, I feel pretty. Okay, so here is the point.
Singing I feel pretty.
He did.
Yes,
he sang
there
that.
It is.
So here is the Minority Corner version that I wanted to talk to you about.
There's a bunch of white people?
Well, yes. But, okay. This is me side-eyeing Bill Murray.
Ooh, okay. Because I'm glad you're doing this because I already knew I was side-eyeing him from something. And now I'm feeling I can still have empathy for someone I'm side-eyeing.
Totally.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he, like I said, he was reading from a lot of like excerpts of like hot, like highbrow. One thing was about a French author. I think he read Hemingway. He like, you know, okay. He just read a bunch of things, right? And then he sang some songs. Well, one of the songs he sang was "It Ain't Necessarily So," which is from Porgy and Bess, which I'm kind of like, but whatever. Sing the song. It's an old standard. People love it. But just remember that it was written by two white guys about for black people for when things were segregated on Bravo. So it's problematic. But I let that slide because I was like, okay, people don't know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Segregated on Broadway or Bravo?
Broadway.
Oh, I thought you said Bravo.
No.
Bravo had segregation? Sorry.
No.
Andy Cohen, what are you doing over there?
I mean, kind of. Look at The Real Housewives. But anyways, besides the point, after that, he reads his things. It's good. I'm enjoying myself. And then he reads an excerpt from Huckleberry Finn.
Okay,
So everybody knows that Huckleberry Finn is anti-slavery, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Whole story, if you don't know, one, go read a book. But two, Huckleberry Finn is this bratty kid who runs away from home, gets on a raft with an escaped slave named Jim, and eventually, sorry, spoiler alert, 100-year-old spoiler alert, Huckleberry Finn helps Jim escape to freedom. So,
was that in the Jonathan Taylor Thomas
Get
Disney
out of
version?
Here, Renata!
I just don't remember that part. Was it Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Huckleberry Finn?
I don't remember. I'm too old
offense.
For that.
JTT. You were the right age for that. You were their demographic.
Missed
like,
it.
How are we going to get these little girls into this theater?
Missed
JTT.
That. Missed that boat. Anyways, I was more of a Freddie Prinze Jr. girl.
Oh, she likes them older.
So he's reading the excerpt and... Yes, he uses the N-word.
I knew this was coming. I was like, does he say the N-word?
Which is, okay, there is the gray area where there's the continuity. But wait, there's more.
Okay. Oh, I already have my thinking.
Because at first I was like, well, I don't like hearing people who aren't black use the N-word. That just, it ruffles my feathers. But okay, so he's reading from the book. He's trying to be continuity. And it's especially a passage about... how stupid people were about slaves in the time.
True. Okay.
But here's the real rub of it. One, he could have chose to say something different than the N-word. He could have said Negro or slave, because basically in the context of that writing, N-word stands for slave at that point.
And it's not like someone was going to jump up and like one of those rowdy people and be like, he didn't say the right word.
Nobody said anything about that. So here's the real rub of it all, right? He reads Jim's voice in the most caricature black slave voice he could do. And granted, he is very...
Shrek 2.
Yeah, he's very lazy with his voices. Like, he does a Frenchman at one point, and it's very like, hum, 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 and like all of that. But for a passage about Huckleberry Finn, which is so loaded about slavery, and he's saying the N-word, at least read Jim straight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he didn't have. Yeah,
he didn't have to make that choice. Mm-hmm. That choice, to me, there's no gray area. That was a faux pas. Third thing is, so he read this thing that's totally anti-slavery, a little bit anti-South, you know, because it's like, you know, these dipshits thought it was the whole passage about these dipshits who wanted to get an escaped slave, right?
Yeah, right.
The second story he reads directly after this is,
I'm already cringing,
is a story about the surrender of the South, right? Where Lee surrenders to Grant, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's all told from the perspective of Grant in his office. And the way that Grant is portrayed in this written piece is of a drunk, hungover idiot. And then he goes into, and then he reads something else. So I feel like that was a choice to put some,
well,
you know?
Yeah. I was sorry to jump in here. I think it tailors back to your second point. And if Bill Murray, like you started this and said that he was going to be this avant-garde artist, right? And if you're being an avant-garde artist, you have to take control over all of your meanings, that your everything means something to you,
right?
Like, it's got to have meaning, like placement. Nothing is accidental,
right?
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a real word.
It works in this context.
It does. Apparently, this whole show sounds accidental.
No, stop it.
So, yeah, like, I think that's definitely, like, problematic in that sense of just, like, the three, I mean, that's, like, literally three strikes right there.
Right? So, am I being, like, what do you think about my breakdown of that.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. To all, like, the predominantly, like, odd, like, this is also an example of, like, trying to explain, like, privilege for everybody right. who is white and didn't have to think about this at all.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, this was now your experience.
Took me out
and
of
then
it.
You
completely
as,
took me out of
as,
it.
As a black human being, mm-hmm. you know, we have, you feel like you are now the spokesperson
right.
for the entire community, mm-hmm. right? And it literally feels like there's a giant spotlight onto you, and that Bill Murray just so casually
yeah.
went about, you know, and I'm not sure what the linear process of this was. Like, I didn't see the show, so I don't know, like, mm-hmm. what the trajectory of this was, and if he was, like, what was the point?
Right.
What was the point of that, and them to go into the order that they did?
Right.
It sounds just a little, lazy, and it sounds like the show was a bit of a miss.
Right, there you go. That's about it. I think that's kind of where it is, where it just makes me kind of go, not so great, not a good choice. It doesn't make me outright hate him. I
sure.
don't think that he is racist at all. No, not at all. Yeah. I think that he was trying to be radical in a lazy, privileged way.
Yep. That sounds about right. I mean, that's, you know, like a lot of liberal media
yeah.
type folks
mm-hmm.
in the industry. I
yep.
would absolutely put that there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I seems like this show is a miss on so many levels, because for one, here's this point, whatever point he was trying to make, that got missed.
Right.
And then everybody who went there to go watch Bill Murray do like Groundhog Day and Ghostbusters and What About Bob, that wasn't there either.
That was a miss.
So, or like those Wes Anderson movies, right?
No.
Or just do quotes. What did they think he was going to do? Just quotes from Wes Anderson?
I don't know
films?
What
don't
they
know.
Thought he was going to do. He's not a
come
stand-up
out in a Ghostbusters
guy.
Costume?
I know.
Yeah. No. So there was that. So it sounds like a miss on so many levels, because also whoever's marketing this show, like, no one really knew what the
but
fuck to
we
expect.
Saw that's
is there someone?
That's the other
is someone
thing.
Directing this piece?
No, here's the thing yeah. that I don't understand with the audience. From now, we're switching back to the audience critique, because
oh,
the
okay.
reason
yeah,
we
yeah.
saw, me and Andrew saw the freaking commercial, and we knew what we were getting
oh.
into from the commercial. It's
oh.
him fucking reciting some weird shit with like a cellist playing on the brochure. It's oh. literally him with a guy holding a cello. Like it is
like this is exactly
I
what I signed up
I
for. I could
knew
done
it was gonna
the,
be weird,
less,
but like come on.
I could have done with less usage of the N word.
Yes.
And that's Grant being a drunk.
Yes.
But other than that, you know what you're getting in for. Yeah. Sounds like a miss of a show.
It was wild.
In that case, yeah. Let's put that back in the corner, Bill Murray. Put your show back in the corner.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you survived.
Thank you. I'm glad I did too.
So Golden Globe nominations came out.
Okay. How many black people?
And we are not included once again.
What?
Snub.
Didn't Blackish and Anthony Anderson?
Oh, I meant like Minority Corner
oh.
nomination.
I didn't even. I was just. You're thinking real micro. I was thinking macro, like in terms of all black people. But all right.
But
all right.
So yeah, Anthony Anderson got Blackish. They got nominated as per usual.
Okay.
But I just think it's like because like last year there was such black proliferation. There's
yes.
so many.
Mm-hmm.
So many black nominations that happen, and then to go to like this year, I just like you look at the list, and I know some people are be like, "Well, what more do you people want?" Well,
who's
first of all,
that?
Fuck you.
I know.
Who's talking
that
about
asshole?
You people? And that can hold me back. They got me all kind of riled up.
I do not like this
earrings.
Imaginary
I put
person.
My Vaseline up. Fuck whoever you are. You need to shut up and listen, because you got me all kind of riled up. I don't know
your
where that
own creation.
Came from.
I know.
I am livid at them. And second of all, person who I will not name. I don't know.
Nobody. This invisible person.
Charles in charge. Not in charge of this. Also, you just like there's so many names that have been nominated, but between all the different categories, right?
Yeah.
And it's still just so many white people
well, yeah,
that they're just
yeah.
like so many white people. I guess like I was amazed because like even if you look at it like, well, James, don't just talk about all the black people. I'm like, well, hold on, let me get there, Charles.
Charles is on your ass tonight.
I know. Let me bring. You know who Charles was? Charles was that guy who yelled at Bill Murray that his show sucks.
Boo! Fuck this show.
You need to. Charles, what are you doing with your life? I don't see you doing a podcast just running around booing people. Anyways, Charles. So
wow. Yes.
Guillermo del Toro is the only Latino who is nominated.
Only one?
Across the board. Aziz Ansari is the only Asian person who is nominated.
God, just one.
And so then you just have like a handful of black folks. Mary J. Blige, which... What?
Oh, yeah, because she's in Blood, Mudbound.
Mudbound.
Yeah, she's supposed to be really good in it.
Okay, you know I'm not here for Mary J.
I like Mary J.
I know.
You don't like a diva.
No, I do, because I love Patti LaBelle. I love... Oh, you know what? You might be... You know what it is? you're partly right, though. I don't like a non-dancer. If you're not dancing, I've got enough... That's what it is.
Well, you know what, James?
What?
You got a lot of hateration in this dancery.
You know what? I hate that fucking song. I think it's... That was my next thing. What is that? Family Affair? Yeah. Is that Family Affair? I just learned the name of that song yesterday. I thought it was just that hateration song. I think it's so cheesy. Come get your hateration, holleration. And she's like trying to bebop and bounce in the music video.
I love some Mary J. You will never convince me on this. She's an OG.
When she's doing Waiting to Exhale soundtrack, I'm here for that. Burn It Up mm-hmm. with Angela Bassett.
Okay.
Light It on Fire.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here for that. But here's why I'm so confused about the Golden Globe nominations, because New York, we just had our first snowstorm.
Yes.
And I spent the day cuddled up just watching nothing but black excellence. I watched a little bit of Atlanta. I finished season 2 of Queen Sugar, which everybody stopped sleeping on. It is so good. Queen Sugar is so good. I can't believe it's not getting any attention. People are still sleeping on it. And then I dipped into She's Gotta Have It.
I've watched it. I think it's great, we need to have more problematic black shows because we don't have enough black shows.
I watched only the first 4 episodes, and then when she made a choice about not going with that one person, I was like, this is some 20-year-old bullshit. Because if I was in my 30s, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But there's something that is clearly a great choice.
Well, I'm going to say this, and I like this, and this is actually pretty revolutionary. I like that they have a black woman character who is fucking selfish and a space cadet, because normally black women have to have we have our shit together. We take care of everyone and our babies and
Annalise
our hair
Keating.
Is fucking laid. And Annalise Keating is a mess, but she also at the end of the day, she takes care of the shit.
True. Yeah.
She's got to have it.
I guess
Nola is a mess and a half.
She is a mess. You're right. I guess what I liked about She's Got to Have It, and I'm glad that you watched it, because I'm curious. I wanted to know your opinions on this, because I feel I felt the show, and I am a man, but I felt like from my male ally perspective, I thought it was a feminist show. You don't feel that?
There's not a moment when she's not talking about who she's fucking, and majority of the time it's a dude.
I guess, okay, I feel you on that. I guess I'm only 3 or 4 episodes in.
And even with her friend, it's about the guy that they, like, both had sex with.
But doesn't she, sometimes she's talking about, like, her painting and her work as, like, an artist, and she's trying to become an artist. And,
like, I like
to
that.
To me, that is not, like, most of her drive, and that's why she won't settle down with any of these guys, because she's like, I'm being an artist and trying to do my artistry.
I can see that. I think the only reason, and it's the whole premise of the show, but...
I would
like to... I feel like you can have a show about sexuality and feminism, but I would like less... I feel like when it comes to women, it's always about love and relationships. That's what our narrative always is.
I feel like most, and I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I do think that most, I would say 90% of shit that Hollywood produces, even 98% of it has a love story involved in it in some way or some aspect.
Yeah. For sure.
Even like dude shoot 'em ups. It's just like there's some woman or something.
But that's the woman's part.
Here's what I was thinking that I, and if She's Gotta Have It was a white woman,
right?
Do you think that there'd be more feminists backing the show and waving their flags about it?
Ooh, good question.
Because that was my thing when I was watching this, because I was like, holy fuck, this is Spike Lee, who I've met.
Yeah.
And I know this is a deterrent from the original She's Gotta Have
It's different.
I feel like it's going deeper into conversations about that women I feel like are facing and like, you know, just like the catcalling and just like and also just her sexuality, and just she'll date a woman and I felt like there was a more of a deeper look into who this woman from the 90s was.
Yeah.
And I just feel that if like Lena Dunham had done this show, people would be like, oh, this show is so revolutionary. Of course. And just so amazing.
It's the girls' complex that you're talking about. And I feel like I like that she's got to have it exist.
Me too. Absolutely.
But I do, and it's so cyclical because the original She's Gotta Have It came out in the 80s. And I feel like that inspired a lot of things that are out now, and that includes Insecure. And I feel like Insecure is the show that I would have rather got the attention than Girls. Because I feel like Insecure is more of a parallel to Girls, if that makes sense. In terms of, it also shows an aspect of feminism where they got a character talking about her job. They have about therapy. They have the multidimensional aspects of it. But I do like She's Gotta Have It because she's a selfish mess and we need to see more black women like that.
And she also goes to therapy too.
Right.
And She's Gotta Have It, which I also love too, because again, there's a lot of stigmas about black people not going into therapy.
Right.
And boom, here it is, this woman that's in there. And what I love is that both of these shows exists.
Yes, exactly.
I almost felt, because of Insecure, and then I had to check this, because I was like, what would Aneke say? Why can't they both exist? Because at first I was like, oh, I feel like Insecure already beat She's Gotta Have It to the punch. Why can't they both exist?
Right.
There's tons of
that's why it's cyclical.
White lady shows.
That's why it's cyclical, because Insecure, you look at She's Gotta Have It and you think, Insecure, but then you go, wait a minute, no, Insecure exists because of the original She's Gotta Have It.
Yeah, so and it's now, kind of, because Insecure is here, She's Gotta Have It is back.
Exactly.
It's time to revisit
so,
it.
Like you said, I think it's good that all of these things happen. We just need more black women, black people, black people of color, different representatives out there, multiple different shows, because we're different. There's different personalities. And I don't have to like, in fact, I like the fact that I did not like her, because I was like, that's good. Like I need more characters out there that are representative of the different facets of black people. And some of them I'm not going to relate to. And that means that there's more representation out there.
Ooh, good call. Because she shouldn't have to be black woman everything. And you know what? Here's the thing. She doesn't have to be anymore. Because, I will say this, Olivia Pope cracked that glass ceiling.
She did.
Say what you will.
She did.
Olivia Pope fucking smashed it.
She fucking
down.
Crossed the line and is like, everybody watches fucking Scandal.
And then boom, and like every, and now there was just, then there became the being Mary Janes, just all the all the other shows, you know? And so it goes back to my other point.
Yeah.
I just feel like looking at the Golden Globes that there could be, I know there's other programming out there that there's just so many goddamn white people winning awards still. And as someone who's like in the industry, it's just sort of still more work to do.
Exactly.
Still more work
to
fucking do.
Like for an example, just real quick, I got fascinated with the new movie called The Darkest Hour because Gary Oldman, through makeup, got turned into Winston Churchill. And I was like, that's interesting. And then I was kind of perusing around and I was like, let me watch this first episode of fucking The Crown. Everybody's talking about it. Let me see what this big hubbub is. Here comes fucking Winston Churchill again, played by John Lithgow. And I'm like, why is there two Winston Churchills? Like, what? we need one more characters and diversity of characters. Like, that is a proven point right there and then.
People are flocking over to look at, like, ooh, The Crown and British stuff. Like, watch your own shit from the backyard. Like, again, like, Queen Sugar is bringing up so many issues.
It was excellent.
That, like,
Atlanta is like prestige. Atlanta, to me, was prestige television.
Yeah. Well, there it is. I'm so glad we got to talk about She's Gotta Have It. And also, props to Spike Lee, because I just feel like Spike Lee is an old... Look, Spike Lee and Bill Murray are about the same age.
Yep.
And I feel like Spike Lee is in a space of still growing and learning about what the conversations and dialogues are. And I'm really impressed. I was a little nervous about what She's Gotta Have It was going to be.
Yeah.
And I felt like he re-updated it. And also the soundtrack. Like,
it's good.
Made me just love... Like, it made me miss, like, 80s and 90s black movies.
Me
because
too.
The music defined
so
it.
Good.
And like, every time you're like, what's this song? They would show what the CD
I love
it.
I know, which is so crazy. I do have to side eye one thing where they did have one segment where they did a terrible caricature of a cab driver, and I really wish they didn't do that. She's Gotta Have It, support it. Fucking Spike Lee got so many women in the writer's room. Every single episode except for the ones that he wrote, written by a woman.
I saw that. I was like, as I was watching it, I was like, wait a minute, who's writing this? Yeah. And I was like, okay. All right. And I appreciate that because I needed to, like, I didn't want it to come from Spike Lee. And Spike Lee, that's what I'm saying. Spike Lee is fucking smart, brilliant ass man. My hat goes off to him.
Amen. Should we go to your corner? Well, I am ready for your corner.
Let's get into it, my lady.
Okay. Let's talk about prep baby.
Let's talk about you
and me. Let's talk about
all the good things and the bad things it may be. Let's talk about prep.
Let's talk about prep.
Let's talk about prep. All right, welcome to Prep Land.
I like that, and also I like how you just, you know, you took over with it. I felt like we weren't really blending well, so.
You just faded into the background.
The timing was weird, so I was like, "James, you need to do this."
5, 6, 7, 8. Come on, either be Beyonce or Kelly. Pick one.
Hey,
pick one.
Side note.
Pick one.
Yeah. Way back when, during the origin of our friendships, listeners, I once had to learn a dance move from James with a bunch of people, and James once called me out and said, "Don't do it the way Aneke is doing it."
Well, I wanted you to be better. My baby girl.
James is a tough teacher, but he gets the job done.
And you learned that move. You went home and drilled that fucking move. Fucking drilled it. I do miss our dance days. Anytime there was a routine, throw an IK in there. All right.
So
I wanted to circle back from my conversation that I dipped into for a hot second last week.
You gave a little preview.
I want to talk about prep because this is also new for me as someone who is currently on prep. Mm. There's still, like, what is prep? What is the debate about? What is all the hubbub? So I want to break it down for our community out there. And also, as we start, I want to start taking away some of the stigma, I guess, with people talking about prep. Super. Just like people want to take the stigma away from the pill, right? And not make it such like a secretive
or like
thing
a free will and free titty hippie drug.
Yeah, totally. Well, and let's talk. Yeah. So back in 2012, scientists deduce.
Ooh, that's a good science word. Look at you. Right? Okay.
They deduced that it could be about 99% effective to block HIV transmission if it were taken daily.
Oh.
So. But what is this PrEP?
Yeah, tell me.
So PrEP is, and some of this is also coming from our listener, Dan W., who provided us with a pamphlet a few months ago.
Dan, you pamphlet man. I love it.
You know we love a pamphlet. And if you guys want, minority, if you want Aneke and I to read some information, you know what you got to do.
You got to send it to us.
In a pamphlet.
But also, give us your sources. Because I will be looking at it with a fine tooth comb because I'm a librarian.
So PrEP, there's PrEP and then there's also PEP.
Oh, I didn't know that. PrEP,
oh, yeah, I'll tell you about what those are. See, this is good.
Okay.
So PrEP is short for pre-exposure prophylaxis.
And a prophylaxis is a science word for like a sex thing, like a condom or a pill, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, we are... that sounds right to me. Okay. I don't know. It's just like fancy science words.
Okay.
But I like that.
Yeah.
So with this, you can prevent the disease before getting it. So PrEP, to answer your question from last week, is also known as Truvada.
Yeah. Oh, I was right. Okay.
You were right. And it's made up of two different drugs, tenofovir and amantrasabin.
Sure.
That cannot be right.
You know what?
Who's she?
This is your corner. You got this.
That's right. Yeah, get out of here, Charles. He's like a Roger of Minority
Corner.
Go home, Charles.
Charles is not over here.
You are not in charge. So these are HIV treatment drugs that, when used together, can protect your T cells, which, HIV is what attacks your T cells and then makes you susceptible to getting sick. And you don't necessarily die from HIV. You would die from
AIDS.
If AIDS were triggered. And then from AIDS, you don't necessarily die from AIDS, but like getting like pneumonia.
Because
essentially your immune system
weak.
Is very, very, is exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily die from those disease, from those, your body gets attacked by them. So with this, and so what they happen was, was is that there are people who are already taking, so people were taking Truvada, and then they were like, well, what happens if people who are not on HIV, what happens if they start taking it?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. So they were like, oh, and so that's why, like, is sometimes people are like, oh, we don't necessarily know, because these are the questions I have with my doctor.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't know the long term. Listen here, black lady doctor. That's the name of my doctor.
That's what you call her.
I say BLD. Black lady doctor.
BLD.
BLD. Listen here, BLD. It's like, well, people don't really know the long-term effects from this medication. She's like, well, actually, we do because people have been taking Truvada for decades. So they know the effects from that.
I did not know this, science community.
Yeah. So you do have to take the pill every day.
Okay.
And after the first week, your body is you can't, like, take the pill and then, like, now I'm safe and ready to go. It takes about, like, a week for it to fully get into your system.
That's in a week?
Yeah, it takes about a week. So it's kind of like birth control, though. Like,
birth control, you take a whole month before it gets into your system.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's like birth control in the sense of if you miss a pill, then we'll put you at risk.
Oh, okay.
Usually, especially if you go out for three days, you're like super at risk.
They better develop a patch real quick. People be missing their pills.
Well, exactly. So we'll get into that because it's part of the debate.
Okay.
So then there's PEP. And so PEP is if you don't take PrEP or if you forgot to for a few days and had a high risk interaction and like you had sex with someone that you believe is HIV positive and not undetectable. Mm-hmm. So you can take PEP, which is post-exposure prophylaxis. And you can kind of think of it as plan B,
morning after
birth control, morning after. Yeah. And it must be taken within 72 hours after your first risk. And that way it'll protect your T cells from getting infected. It's very rough on your system, though. I've known people who've taken it. It's very, very intense.
As is plan B. Oh, my God. I've never taken it, but I know people. Oof.
So you definitely don't want it with both of those. You don't want to just be like, well,
whoops, gonna do it. No, you're gonna be a wreck.
It's so not. Yeah. And with PEP, I do believe you can get at any, if you're living in a main city, you can go to any sort of like clinic, like a Planned Parenthood or any sort of, most major cities have health clinics that you can visit.
That's good.
If you don't have health insurance. So definitely
check it out.
Go to that. So anyone can take PrEP if you are HIV negative, obviously. Mm-hmm. So you have to get tested before your doctor will even put you on it. Mm. And then once you've got the clear, you get tested. You have to go in every 3 months to your doctor.
Damn, that's a lot.
Because it is kind of, this is all relatively new.
Yeah.
So you get to go into your doctor every 3 months because they want to check your vitals, check your blood, do blood work. They'll check your kidneys.
That's good.
Want to make sure your kidneys are running well. Make sure that if you're not being infected with other STIs as well. So I think that's really dope because like I, as a man who was not going to the doctor at all.
Now you got a regular checkup time to.
Four times a month. And I'm just like, doctor, what's this? I was like, what is this? She's like, it's a keloid. I'm like, how do we get rid of it? And I got an appointment to get rid of a keloid.
That's what you do with the doctor. I'm glad you're doing that because that's what I do with the doctor. And it's usually a quick fix. Last time I was like, what's this on my foot? She's like, that's a mole. I'm like, what's this on my elbow? That's some dry skin. Use this thing. I'm like, what about this? That's this. It's like doctors are there for that. And if they have any problem, PSA to everyone out there. If you have a doctor that has a problem with you asking silly little questions, change your doctor.
Yeah, go get your black lady doctor because she loves questions. Get your BLD. She sounds like a sandwich.
I know.
I want a BLD.
Sounds delicious.
So it can cause pain and nausea within your first 72 hours, which I definitely had some nausea as I was trying to run an Avengers 10K.
Just doing it all, James.
You still have to use a condom. Like PrEP doesn't prevent
gonorrhea.
Yes, it does not prevent against other STIs as well. So, and in fact, there has been a rise amongst STIs in the last few years, specifically in the gay community. So now we enter into the debate. Some of you are thinking, like, this sounds great. It's protecting everybody's T cells. Why isn't everybody just skipping the streets to this miracle drug, dancing in the streets?
This sounds exactly like the pill.
Right, and I think like it's in the same journey,
because
and, like,
you still get gonorrhea and chlamydia and all those diseases when you take the pill. It's just no babies.
You just don't get the STI baby, right? So Okay, what's some of the debate? First of all, PrEP is hella expensive. Ooh. Especially if you do not have health insurance. If you do not have health insurance, it can be anywhere from like $1,000 a month or $8,000 to $14,000 a year.
The fuck is it so expensive?
Now, that's the other thing, too. It's like, I mean, I feel like HIV, and that's the thing is that, like, too, also, like, who is getting access to this?
Right.
Because it's, like, you would think about, like, you know, poor communities and not even just in the U.S., but other countries.
Yeah.
Like, getting this over to, like, you know, in Africa.
Yes.
And in other areas as well. So there's also the question of access, because who's getting the resources to this? Not all governments are even, I think it just is now being subsidized in the U.K., I believe.
Oh, shit. People need to have access to this. Like, people forget how prevalent HIV and AIDS are in certain communities. It's around.
It's still here. And it's also the question of, like, who... So if there is money allocated to organizations, like, how does the money get distributed between... Because you got research that needs money still, treatment, counseling, testing, primary prevention. There's a lot of factors into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, some part of the debate is this just, you know, providing... an avenue for quote-unquote, I'm just reading the debates, high-risk behaviors.
This
is part of the debate is like, well, it's just giving permission for people to engage in, like, you know, lots of risky behavior or sex workers.
What the fuck? This is, like, legit. This is the story called Read Your History, because this is the same shit people are saying about birth control. Like, guys? We've done
and
this.
And then... You might remember this one from the greatest hits of We've Already Been There Before. Will men adhere to it and remember to take the pill every day?
I don't know about that, but will they? Yes, if they don't want to get AIDS. Or HIV. HIV, excuse me, that was terrible.
But it's all conversation and dialogue here. But see, there is, I mean, and that is, I think, a healthy argument, too, because you're also, if I'm having sex with someone, you're putting faith into them that they are who they are, what they're saying they are. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, I would still want to use condoms, even though I'm still on PrEP, not only from the STIs, but just because, like, you might have missed a week or something. I don't know.
Right, exactly. And that's why I'm like, I know this is, like, you're gearing, like, just for all communities, like, if you're driving and you don't feel, I always don't trust other people driving, so I drive as safe and I try to be as actively looking out as possible. If I was out there, single woman, living, you know, my single life, living single, I would be on PrEP too, because I trust myself. I don't trust other people.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is I've looked at it as, you know, a extra safety precaution for my own self, you know, not that, like, and so then there's Michael Weinstein, who's the head of AIDS Healthcare in Los Angeles, who is heavily against this little blue pill. So he considers this, and there's a documentary, I'm going to post a link, a little 14 documentary that Al Jazeera did about, and this is about 2014 when the debate was really raging, and he considers this a potential possible public health disaster.
What?
He says that for him, he says the majority of gay men are using condoms, and he thinks that, you know, something like this is just going to allow people to just go out there to crystal meth binge parties and bareback sex parties. So that's where he's thinking.
He sure thinks highly of humanity, doesn't he?
Especially his own community.
I know, what the fuck?
He's like, you know, he just thinks this to be a party drug. And he says, you know, condoms are 98% effective. And while that is true, Mr. Weinstein,
yes,
HIV rates are still high and rising, even though we know that condoms are 98% effective. So
thank you.
People are not using them. So we can't just keep shoving condoms in people's faces and being like, use these. They're not using them.
Yeah, it's called protect yourself, take a pill.
Yeah, and we have, like, another safety precaution here. And even just looking at HIV rates, like, how are they, what they look like specifically in the gay community, with annual infections have increased 35% amongst 25 to 34-year-olds. Mm. And this is, it's kind of, because that's in my age. Yeah. was, I remember being a kid.
Me
and
too.
Hearing about HIV and AIDS. And so
it's not like you could just say like, oh, they're young, they don't know about it. That, I mean, this is the 90s. Like that stuff was like really still going on. Like, yeah, the epidemic was the 80s. The 90s was still the fucking talked about backlash of it. I would say the only time that it kind of became like undercurrent was the 2000s.
Yeah. And that's why 25 to 34, those people fit within the demographic of people who were like at least born mostly in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, and Black and gay bisexual men are still most at risk, though those numbers are not necessarily increasing. I don't know that for sure. So, but people who are injecting themselves with drugs had a 56% reduction.
Oh.
And heterosexual men and women had a 36% reduction.
Oh, wow.
So, my community, what is going on?
What's happening?
And what is happening? And there's still 50,000 new infections a year. Two-thirds of those are men who have sex with men. Mm. That is overly represented,
right?
Being overrepresenting in that category.
Yeah, because you got to think about what's the national percentage of that category compared to everybody else. So if it's a higher thing and like, it's less percentage, what the fuck's happening?
Two-thirds of the population is not gay.
Yeah.
Like, and thank God.
Whoa. James.
Well, our bars are crowded.
There would be more bars, I would like to hope. It wouldn't just like,
okay, you're right. I'm like, the parade is long enough, Aneke. The parade is so
James.
Long.
You're gonna back out of this room.
Can we not be giraffes? 94% of them are having gay sex.
As we know from that picture that you posted.
And Aneke was hella side-eyeing that picture of giraffes.
It was just a shock. Person. They're so muscular.
I wanted to reel them in. I wanted to reel in the audience, and it worked. So Scott Wiener, Representative Scott Wiener, who he is now a state representative in California. He was one of the district people in San Francisco. I was trying to get a date with him for a while, but kind of as a joke, kind of like I just wanted to be.
I don't think he's a state representative. I only know that because I just looked up that the senior state representative is Dianne Feinstein and the junior representative is Kamala Harris.
No. I mean, when I say state representative, I mean like you have the California like legislatures.
Got
right?
it. Yes. Sorry.
Yes,
sorry.
That's what I meant. Like a representative for the California House of Representatives. That's what I believe he is. Yeah. So anyways, so Scott Wiener, the joke was I was vying to try to be his little arm king. We had to ruin the joke.
I ruined the lead.
Actually,
I'm a librarian. Aren't you used to that by now?
I know.
I'm a know-it-all.
She is.
The cross-eyed bear.
But I wanted to just, you know, part of like one of my side piece dreams is just to be like trophy wife to like someone really.
Yeah. And you know what? I fully support you in that.
Right? I would be a great first man.
You know how to sparkle a room. So I feel like you would be perfect
for
that.
You should be so lucky, Scott Wiener. And this is the good Wiener, not the Anthony Wiener.
All these last names are just...
But Scott Wiener, he made headlines because he came out like as he said, hey, I'm using PrEP, and he's, you know, this public figure.
Right.
And he, you know, says that 5 out of 6 gay men are not constantly or consistently using condoms. So this is going back to why we need that second sort of precaution, like, you know, with having this little blue pill. And so also to look back at like also just to play just to show another perspective that when they say about like 90 that this pill is 90 to 99% effective.
Yeah.
It's also you have to remember this was in a controlled environment.
Ooh.
And they also cherry picked the cases that were able to fully adhere to their dosing.
Oh.
And then the 99% figure came from the Strand study in which men were directly observed taking their medication on a daily basis.
Mm.
So they were a part of the study. And so knowing that you're a part of a study could have a more of an impact and making sure that you take it. So
interesting. So that adds a different caveat to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we don't really know, like, outside of the trial setting, like, again, can men remember to take this goddamn pill? Like, will they be remembered to? And also, to circle back onto STIs, Dan Savage points out that, like, we are having a syphilis epidemic.
We are? Ew.
Syphilis in the gay community is on the rise.
I shouldn't say ew. I'm sorry.
It's, yeah.
No, you know what?
It's a thing.
You know what? Protect yourself, people.
Yeah, totally.
Protect yourself.
It's like getting, as I've always said, if you've got an STI, it's like getting a cold on your dick or your vagina. Like, it's a thing that happens. And as Aneke pointed out last week, these viruses are just old as fuck.
Yeah.
And
they know how to game us.
And speaking of gaming, yeah. You know who's got her game on?
Who?
Gonorrhea.
She's up on a rise too now?
Yes, and there's a drug-resistant version of gonorrhea that is out there now. Like, she has,
these bitches know. They don't play.
Smart.
These bitches do not play.
She does not play. So, again, like, there's a lot to on both sort of sides of all the whole entire conversation there. And at the same time, like, also to not, there's this other stigma that those who are taking PrEP are, you know, just slutty men who just want to be able to have.
No, it's called self-protection. You wear your seatbelt so you don't get into a fucking car, like, die in a car accident.
Correct. And there are many men out there who are in, as Dan Savage said, I just want to say this word because I've never heard this, seriodiscordant relationships.
Oh, what is?
Or some other high-risk situations. Do you know what that one?
No.
Do you know what that one is? Okay. And some are just, you know, wanting that other extra just precaution. Again, like wearing this extra sort of seatbelt.
Yes.
And so I also do think it's possibly a generational thing because I know that my therapist was heavily against this, just like this week.
Against it? I don't get why.
Yes.
People.
And my therapist, my therapist was a member of ACT UP. And again, mm-hmm. This is when I was having this conversation with my therapist back in 2014.
Mm.
And so it's still very, 3 years ago, a lot has sort of, you know.
Things change.
Things change. And so I don't really know where he still is now, but he was a member of ACT UP. And ACT UP was like the Black Lives Matter of, you know.
The gay movement.
It was very, actually, no, oh, not okay. Even that. I think it was even, because I don't think Black Lives Matter is very, no, because ACT UP was aggressive.
Oh, Black Lives Matter is not aggressive, no matter what people will tell you.
Although they do have, like, they'll disrupt things.
Okay.
And ACT UP would go and disrupt things. So I guess on that level, they're
similar.
Sort of, you know, they're similar in that sort of a sense. Mm-hmm. And so he was very against it because, again, he just didn't really trust who the people who were putting the medication out there were.
Okay.
And also, I think when you've survived
AIDS
crisis of a plague, and mm-hmm. you saw your friends dying by the masses, you're like, hold up, the only thing that you want is a cure.
Right.
You don't want something that's
Band-Aid.
Gonna, and like, and there is risk still here. Mm. And then with any sex, there's always that risk there. So I do get it, but I definitely think from a generational standpoint. But at the same time, there's also Cleve Jones, who he's old.
Stop it, just say.
I'm trying to put this well.
Cleve Jones is like a young ass bippy calling Cleve Jones old. Just say that he's a pillar.
And he's a pillar of the gay community.
Yes.
And he is in support of PrEP. He said, you know, back in the day it was silence equals death. And he says that now treatment equals prevention.
Mm.
And what we need to do is sort of start putting pressures on rich nations to pay for it.
Yes.
On our countries to pay for it and to be able to make it accessible. And I'm just going to wrap up here. And I don't have, like, is PrEP right for you? I don't know. Only you can make
that's
that decision.
True.
And still, like, even for myself, I'm still, you know, making that
You're
decision
figuring
myself.
It out.
And I'm not saying you got to check it out for your own self. I will say continue to make smart, healthy choices and decisions. That PrEP is not like the end all be all. Like, you're not like, woohoo.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And make sure that you're taking it. And also, everyone's taking PrEP, take that fucking pill. Don't fuck this up.
It's called
Don't fuck this up for
come
us.
Come from the school of where I come from. I have a degree from the school of trust no bitch. And
ooh.
Always protect yourself no matter what. Like, you're living your own fucking life, and you need to take that into your own control. So that means if you're on the pill, then you keep up on that fucking pill. If you are out there having sex, use a fucking condom. Like, protect yourself and trust no bitch.
Trust no bitch. And also have a conversation with other people as well. Like, again, trust no bitch, but still, like, have a conversation. As my therapist
Yeah, you can always
say,
have a conversation.
By the time that you're in bed with them, it's too late to ask them about their last time that they were tested.
Yeah.
It's too late.
You
need to have that conversation before you leave the bar, before you leave your house on the grinder or the scruffy or whatever the fuck
your
you're
pants
on.
Are still on.
Before you leave, you need to have that conversation because you're going to be too much in the heat, right? And the hormones. You're going to be like a giraffe ready to fucking just
a big,
it.
Muscly giraffe.
I want to point out two websites. There's prepwatch.org and My Prep Experience, and you can actually read about different people's experiences of being on PrEP or why they went on PrEP and get some informed sort of decisions. There was this one guy who did the story about how he was on this gay cruise and hooked up with this couple, and they were both positive, and the condom ended up disappearing at one point. And he was like kind of stressed out, but he was like, and they were really drunk, and he was stressed out afterwards because he was like, oh no, but he's like, but he was grateful that he was on PrEP as like an extra sort of
safety vest.
Yeah. My health insurance is covering it. So another thing we need to protect.
Oh, James,
health insurance,
look at you, all that Marvel
I pay $15. Mm. Oh, it's not
Marvel.
No, I'm on the Affordable Healthcare Act.
Thanks,
Connie.
Obama.
I am through Stride Healthcare. Stride Healthcare is really dope. Though I'm hooked up through Fidelis.
Yes.
Through Stride Healthcare. You can sign up online. It takes minutes to sign up through healthcare on them.
Yes.
But you can also go through, like, if you're in a major city, there are health clinics out there that are probably doing trials and will be able to help you get to a doctor or sign up for Medicaid or something to be able to protect you out there. And Planned Parenthood, like I said as well, is another resource. So there it is. Some information. Stay informed, stay healthy, and make smart choices.
Amen to that. Hello.
Hey, lady. What you got?
Okay.
What you got?
You know what? I got a really good reception last time from my library corner.
Ooh, I love library corner. Can we get information?
Yes, we can get some information.
I love it.
So basically I'm going to talk about, and this is just going back to one thing that I'm always going to go down to, once again, school of trust no bitch.
Ooh, yes.
I think that we all need to have a discerning eye when we're reading information online.
You are the chancellor, dean, and president of the Universe School of Trust No Bitch. That is, I want that t-shirt.
It's very handy.
That is new t-shirt. I want it in the college lettering, School of Trust No Bitch, and done. Making that
PhD,
next
that's
yes.
me. So basically, and of course, when I say trust no bitch, it's not like you don't need to go around being stank. It's just keeping a wary eye out, just kind of understanding what your environments are and understanding that you're living your life for you and you need to take more authority into what information you're consuming, which is what we all
She's
do
like a
all
cousin
day
to like side eye your heroes. Like it's just another tool. Armor. It's just another tool in your arsenal of weaponry of living out your best life in the world.
Exactly. So. Just understand where it's coming from. Get a picture, get a full understanding. So what I'm going to be talking about today, a lot of this information is slightly dated, but not crazily dated. And if anything that you're going to get from this information is basically just to get an understanding of what you're looking at on the internet, what your auntie is sharing on Facebook, what you need to just truly understand what's floating around out there and how prevalent some of these deceptions can be. The biggest deception that I'm going to be talking about today is called native advertisement.
What does that mean?
Native advertisement. Now, native advertisement is basically a type of advertisement that looks like it's supposed to look like it's native to where you find it. So, for example, there's a regular advertisement, like there's a Pepsi ad, right? So you see a can of Pepsi, it says Pepsi, blah, blah, blah. There's like a teenager drinking it, being like, ah, so refreshing. I'm young and hip. Drink some Pepsi. That's an ad, right? Kylie or Kendall
Jenner.
Making an ass of herself.
Yeah, get out of
and
here.
Native advertisement would be something like, okay, so BuzzFeed is big on this one. I'm going to go back to BuzzFeed a lot. So you'll go onto BuzzFeed, and this was really, there's an article that's called The Definitive Ranking of Summer Sounds, right? It looks exactly like an article. Looks like a regular BuzzFeed article. And it's like, oh, number 10, the fairy horn honking as it pulls into the dock. Ooh, summer, right? It's written by Pepsi.
Oh.
So.
And, like, meanwhile, they're probably being like, as you're at this dock, having a Pepsi is really delicious.
Exactly. It all basically leads up to that. So, wow. Some people may be like, oh, I get what you're talking about, Aneke. It's like when you're watching a movie and somebody cracks open a Pepsi and goes, ooh, this refreshing Pepsi is delicious, and then they move on with the story. No. Mm-hmm. That's product placement.
Yeah.
Product placement is when, and you know this because I'm sure you did that with your Campbell Soups commercial.
That was full-blown product placement. Whole date was the product placement ad.
I know.
Actually, I would say that my Campbell's Soup commercial was more native advertisement because it was literally a Campbell's Soup commercial disguised as like a reality TV show.
Yes and no. Okay. I would say the difference between, and we'll get into the thin slicing of it.
Okay.
It was prominently featured. That's the difference between product placement and a native advertisement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you were literally like, what soup are you? What sandwich are you? You know?
And, like, the opening was like Campbell's. It was, like, very, it lets you know it was, like, Campbell's. Like, in the very beginning. Like, had the Campbell's Soup logo.
That's a product placement. Yeah. Like, another product placement is, like, those fucking tummy teas that those, like, Instagram bitches are hawking on Instagram. Tummy tea, shake weight, whatever. That's, like, product placement.
Yeah.
A native ad on Instagram are one of those where it's, like, it looks like a picture of just food.
Ooh.
And you're, like, scanning through and you're, like, oh, that's beautiful. But then you realize it says sponsor content on it.
Right. So this is, like, when, like, I've seen this before where writers are, like, really talking something up, and it's because like they've paid for them to talk this up.
Exactly. And we'll get further into it because the examples that we're going through right now are super simple, and like a lot of you are like, oh, Aneke, I know native advertising.
Charles,
sponsor
sit
things.
Down
I can
and let Aneke do this. God, he is just too much this episode.
And like, so here's a crazy thing, they are really meant to blend in, like for example, there's two BuzzFeed articles. Like, remember the one that I was talking about, the definitive ranking of summer sounds, where it's like, blah, blah, blah.
Written by Pepsi.
There is another BuzzFeed article called 26 Things Every Lazy Person Needs This Summer. That's a real article.
Oh, okay. I thought this was going to
so
be advertised
it's
by, like,
so
Best Buy or something.
I know. No, that's how, but that's sneaky though, how those two things look so similar. And the only way that you could tell that it is native advertisement is by who it's written by in the BuzzFeed.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you would just skip over that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how did this begin? Basically, it all started with this thing called advertorials, which would be in magazines. Oh, so it would be like, it would be like an article when you're reading a magazine, and it would literally have like written content, but it's just basically an ad to like Guinness or something, right?
Yeah. But it looks like it's an article because my travel magazine, we used to do, I remember doing like advertorials for like, there was this fancy cruise line and they had like a full page spread advertorial, but it looks like it's an article, but it's actually paid ad. Has a writer, photographer, but it's all paid.
That is a great granddaddy of native advertisements, right?
Yeah.
So then there's the internet now. So internet is basically taking over print media. We all know this. Yep. Like, blogs are the new magazines.
Ooh.
So first they tried banner ads. You know a banner ad, right? You go onto,
fucking
it's right
banner
there.
Ads. And some of them are so obnoxious because they'll like pop up and take over your whole goddamn screen looking at you comingsoon.net. Fix your banner ads. Fix your banner ads. I'm like, I don't need this.
So see, judging from that reaction, we all know that we hate banner ads.
Yes, I fucking hate a banner ad.
So it's gotten so bad. So in 1994, above 5% would be clicked. So 1994, heyday of banner ads, just a little bit above 5% would be clicked.
The glory days.
Right?
There's someone in their
the
office
glory
being
days.
Like, oh, the days.
Now, 0.2
why do they
to 0.3% people click on banner ads.
Why do they put money into them? Because I guess it's just like the power of like how many times you see an ad or something,
right? But they're not doing it anymore because of that. Because they're like, we got to find a better way. Nobody's clicking these banner ads. People have fucking ad blockers on their computers, so you don't see these things.
I want
right
those.
Yeah, so there's ad blockers. No one's clicking on banner ads. Our attention spans are hella shortening. In the year 2000, a normal human's attention span was 12 seconds. In 2013, it went down to 8 seconds.
Oh, no!
So I don't even know what we're at now, 4 years later.
Oh, it's even worse, because those little
we're
Instagram
probably at
videos?
Like 2 seconds.
Oh,
I know.
Lord.
Okay, and also we're spending less time on individual web pages. So 17% of page views last less than 4 seconds, and 4% of page views last more than 10 minutes. Mm. So we're like clicking through things constantly. So banner ads aren't working. Those pop-up ads aren't working because we're just not paying attention to them.
Nope.
So advertisers were like, how the fuck are we going to get people to get ads, right? So Google, they tried their luck with text-based advertising. So, you know, you go into Google and let's say you just search shoes and next thing you know, you're getting advertised for shoes.
Ugh, yes.
Or like you are searching on Amazon.com about some chonies and then you go onto Facebook and you got an
panties
ad for bras.
Everywhere.
I know. Exactly. So that's Google created that. Mm. And that is, they're trying to do that. That tried. And that eventually led to... Oh, okay, so we're going to have to hybrid. We need text-based advertising. We also need to make sure people stay on the page and get fooled, and it's on a website. So thus was born the internet advertorial, which is native advertising.
Oh.
So here's the thing. Okay, BuzzFeed, like I said already, they utilize native advertisements. Mm-hmm. The New York Times has been used to utilize native advertisements. But here is the craziest thing. Mm-hmm. So remember how advertorial started in print magazines?
Yeah.
And then it went into internet, and now it's back into print, and it's gone so far that on the cover of Forbes, they actually, you know how they had the article breakdowns? They legit advertised a native advertisement for Fidelity on Forbes cover.
What? That's crazy. On the cover of the magazine, it's like, here's the ad that we have inside.
Exactly.
That would be, oh my gosh.
It's nuts.
That's crazy.
So it's gotten so crazy now that because since it's advertisements, they are paying money, big time money, for legit journalists to write pieces that are native advertisements.
And I bet those
they're beautiful.
But I'm sure because they have top dollar for these
ads. Right?
And they're just like, get your eyes. They've got all the technology for them.
Yep.
And they're, because like advertising, like I learned this when I was working at the magazine. We did not make money from subscriptions. We made all of our money from advertisers. Advertising makes the world go round. Like,
it's so true.
San Francisco would probably have more money if they allowed giant ass billboards and advertisements like New York does with their Times Square. Yeah. They would have more money. It generates so much money for fucking New York.
So much money. It's crazy. So because it generates so much money and it already has a lot of money, they're able to pump money into these fake articles. So for one example, Wired Magazine. So a big a company that does this a lot and does it well is Netflix.
Oh.
So Netflix, they bought an article that was written in Wired Magazine that was written by this media specialist guy who is known to be a media critique guy. And he wrote all about binge watching. Mm. It's an article that's all about binge watching. Up at the top in very tiny, tiny letters, it says sponsor content.
Mm-hmm.
But when you scroll through, it's very dynamic. It has moving pages. Things move as you scroll to the different things. There's an interview and placed in it. So you totally forget that it says sponsor content.
Yeah.
And literally at the beginning, it talks about how wonderful binge watching is.
Which
is like, ugh.
I've seen these on Vulture. I've seen these sponsored content pieces on Vulture, which is like, you know, my bread and butter for entertainment.
Me too. I completely zone out when it comes to sponsor content.
Oh, me too. I don't click on them.
You don't, but so many people do. So another thing that Netflix did, they had a big, actually was a good article. That's the problem. Like some of this stuff is actually really good. Mm. Netflix sponsored an article that was written in the New York Times that was all about kind of promoting Orange is the New Black, not kind of, but is, but it was all about women in prisons. And it told all of these beautiful stories about women in prisons, but it just cheapens it
because
that it's an ad.
Because the writer would not be able to also have the space to, if he needed to critique something about Orange is the Black, which I have, like I stopped watching because I was like, I'm tired of watching the show about these white ladies. Like I'm more interested in the black and brown Latina ladies because who are overly represented in the prison system as it is. Like there's just too many white ladies on Orange is the New Black. I'm like, I don't care.
And when you're getting paid by somebody, you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. So you're going to get an unbalanced article. So here's the problem.
Yeah.
And this was at the time, I think last June, I pulled these statistics. So they're probably even more so now.
Ooh.
So BuzzFeed, they employ a creative service team of 40 to create content for advertisers. Wow. The Washington Post, they have a branded Connect studio that creates ads with modern journalism sensibilities. Now, journalism and ads, that's like oil and water, yeah. So that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Hearst is a huge news conglomerate. Yeah. Teams of 5 salaried employees to create sponsored content. Salaried. So people, normally you would go and an advertiser would come to you to buy out space.
They're already
now
turning
they're
it in-house.
They're implanted. Oh, they're in-house.
Wow.
Time Inc. employs 11 editors of its magazines to write ads. Condé Nast, another huge media component, editors of its magazines will work with a branded content studio.
Yeah.
And the same with the New York Times. They have a big, like, you go to New York Times, their branded studio page, and it is, like, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, but it's all ads!
Yeah. But, Lenneke, like, can I ask you this question? Because I feel you on the frustration, but in some ways, do you feel that we've kind of done this to ourselves because we stopped buying subscriptions? Like, how else do these companies make money, you know?
Like, cause I don't feel sorry for a Pepsi or a whatever.
Well, not Pepsi, but I'm talking... I'm not talking about Pepsi. I'm talking about these media sources that are clearly in a pinch for money, and we depend on them for information and to be able to also be our, you know, we depend on them for information on so many different levels. And
exactly, that's the problem. How are we supposed to... It's like, do you compromise your credibility for money?
True. Because with these writers, like, how do you feel about any of these writers? Like, that guy who was, like, the media go-to guy who wrote that article for
Netflix. I will now question what he has to do. Mm-hmm. I question his... Because here's the thing. And so, basically, there's business and journalism, right? If you add those two things together, if you smash them together, you start to, like you said, question the integrity of the article and the author.
Yeah.
You got to think, well, who's paying you now?
Yeah.
You know, it lessens the reliability of the entire publication. You have several sponsored content things in your article that aren't clearly labeled.
Yeah.
Then what am I supposed to trust that I'm reading?
Sure.
It makes a hard time for people, regular schmoes out there, trying to determine what the motivation of the article is. Yeah.
It's already difficult enough with all, like, you know, the fake news and stuff that's out there. Because that's what I think, because, like, I literally, the conversation that, you know, is happening, like, these companies, I'm not talking about Pepsi. I'm talking about, like time and all, like, but, like, they have to find a way
but
to be able to make money because they have to have a way to be able to employ all
just,
these different people. And
I feel like there's ad space. Use an ad space.
Because the other ads aren't working. But as we mentioned earlier, the clickbaits, like the banners and stuff, they don't really work.
But would you prefer to be deceived?
Oh, I'm not saying that I'm not. I'm just trying to say, like, what is, like, these companies, the media companies, have to make money somehow in some way.
Yeah.
Advertising makes the world go round. TV was invented. TV was not invented to entertain us and make us think about our lives. And it's transformed into something else. TV was invented to be able to sell you shit. That is exactly what it is. Its purpose is for, and still really is at the heart of it to this day. Like, shows get canceled if they can't produce advertisers and ratings and things like that.
Right.
Like, it just, like, we live in, it's capitalism. It's a thing, like, they're constantly wanting to sell us stuff. It's, like, the cyclical thing that, like, in some ways, like, because we're not paying for subscriptions or whatnot. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, like, hide, like, because we're not paying
but
for,
here's the
maybe
thing.
We have to pay for subscription
okay,
content
so
then.
So, this
to
is,
to get
okay,
the
so basically we're going in a different direction. The direction that I was going down is it's going to happen inevitably. Mm-hmm. Just because I hate it doesn't mean that I'm going to stop it. It's happening. And the main reason that I'm bringing it up is
so people
can be more vigilant when they're reading things. It's going to happen. I mean, there's no way of stopping it. It's already infused into the system. People are going to do it. It's done. It's already over. So the reason that I'm bringing this up as a corner for Minority Corner, for those of us that are consuming this information, is to understand what you're looking at. So a couple of tips to understand what you're looking at of what you're reading, so you know for a fact that you aren't reading sponsored content, or to engage in sponsored content smartly, is to think about native ads as elaborate commercials, because that's what they are. Don't use them as, like, a source that you're going to be quoting from. If you are, find something like-minded or opposing, and then that way you're going to be able to have the full picture. Understand understand who is sponsoring it. Like, for example, if you're reading something that is sponsored by Netflix, understand that it's going to have a pro view of streaming services. That's not necessarily bad or good. It's just you're understanding the point of view that it's coming from, you know? So understand, totally. Like I said, why... Understand the competition. So if you're reading something that is sponsored by the Dairy Institute or whatever, understand what the opposing view of that might be. Really kind of get the whole picture. So basically what it boils down to, because like you said, these things need to advertise. People are going to be advertising no matter what using native advertising because that's the way that we're going. It's now on us as consumers mm-hmm. to understand what we're looking at and to use a critical mm-hmm. eye when looking at sources. Don't just post something willy-nilly. Truly mm-hmm. understand what you're posting. Truly understand what you're reading. And then that way you'll be able to engage with your information more informed. And also you'll have a better outlook. And the sharper you get at understanding what you're looking at, the faster you'll get at understanding the content. And plus, this is just a good way to look at any type of information that's out there. Understanding who the author is, what their perspective is, what's the content of where it's coming from, what is it geared to, why are you reading it? If I have to repeat this constantly, I think we'll all be in like a better place, you know? So
you've talked about this before, about understanding who the writers are.
Yes.
And I think it goes right into that too. I love to click on writers and see what else they've also written.
Exactly. Me too.
Yeah.
It's mostly out of petty spite where I'm like, I hate this article. What else have they written? And I'll be like, yep, they write stupid
shit. Of course,
shit.
I get it. So but see, it helps to inform that, right?
Yes.
It just helps to inform. You're like, who is this person?
So, I mean, I wish that like when we were talking before about like, oh, if we could find a better way for these companies to advertise and keep like the journalism up, I wish I could figure out a better way. But honestly, it's just the way it is. That's just our landscape now. So now we just need to know how to navigate through it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us those tools to navigate through. So incredibly helpful from our... Good thing we've got a friendly neighborhood librarian on the team.
That's me!
Otherwise, we'd be buying and reading all kinds of crazy shit. It's true. Saving lives, Aneke. You're saving lives.
My pleasure.
Protect yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yes. That's this whole episode.
Protecting yourself in sexy land and
information land.
Information land, which are my two favorite lands to be in.
It's not a bad place.
Often at the same time.
Ooh. So, just like to crack open a dictionary while you're having some sexy sex.
While I'm looking at some dick. Dictionary and dick go hands in hand. I thought, don't act like you didn't know. Aneke, we have another winner.
I don't know. How long are we going to do this? I think we should give this like
by the
a
end
cap,
of the
like
year.
A couple. Okay. All right.
By the end of the year, if we don't have a winner, we're scrapping it. Thanks for playing, everybody. It was it.
Okay.
So we're still looking for our winner from our 100th episode. We were doing, if we had 100 reviews, we would give away a prize, and we've randomly drawn another review, and this is on iTunes, so you can write a review on iTunes, and if this person doesn't claim their prize in a week, write up a review. You might be able to win before our last episode of the year.
Yes, it's coming fast.
It's coming fast. Get ready. Kwanzaa's coming.
Kwanzaa's are coming.
The winning review is from Love This Podcast, was their title, 5 stars. They wrote this in August. And they wrote, Aneke and James are fantastic. The rapport and care they have for each other comes through and makes for a charming, entertaining, and educational podcast. Yay for intersectionality and learning how to become both a better advocate and ally. You are the winner. So email minoritycorner with a K at gmail.com so we can ship you your prize of Raising Dion, the graphic novel, and The Purposeful Millionaire by James Nowlin.
Yeah.
And a Minority Corner t-shirt.
Oh, wow. You're adding that in there, too?
Oh, I thought... Oh, yeah. But didn't we do that last week? No? Oh.
You know, whatever.
And a t-shirt.
Okay,
We have Minority... You wanted it. We have Minority Corner merchandising. You can look in the show notes on how to get a t-shirt.
Yes. Great episode, James. I'm really excited. So, oh, bad news, y'all.
Oh,
but good news for me.
Yep, good news for you.
My comedy show, Nice Tan, at Sketchfest got sold out. Woo!
I knew that was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen.
I didn't expect it to happen so fast, but you know what? We are some funny ladies, so and men, so I'm happy.
Which is also like my head. I'm still trying to wrap my head around. I've always seen Nice. I will admit, I've always genderized Nice Tan.
And time to stop gendering us because we cross all the barriers.
Oh man, you're so right.
We are inclusive, James.
My head is just trying to wrap around it because I just imagine these funny ass ladies and now
and
you know,
men now. People.
I love these funny ass people. I just love it when things are ladies. I'll just be blatantly honest. I always pick Princess Peach. I always pick Chun-Li. Okay. I just love it when things. I love ladies. I love supporting them, and I'll still support you. Super. Oh, one last thing. And I'll talk about it next week.
Oh, okay. Preview.
But we're gearing up for our revisiting our Kwanzaa episode for next week.
Yes, and, look out for that. Get excited. Get prepared.
And I'll tell you about my special thing that I've started. Got to tune in for next week to hear what has James started this time.
Okay. I love that. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Well, should we call it a day?
That's it. Yeah, they'll call it a night. We'll call it a day. We'll call it a afternoon. We'll call it whatever the fuck you want. Go
whenever
out there.
You're listening.
Whenever you're listening, whatever day, go out there and live your best life. And Charles, go home.
Go home. We're sick of you.
Out of
Bye.
Here. Bye.
I like to Hulu and chill. Am I a monster?
What's happening on Game of Thrones?
What's a technical Emmy?
Why did Dominic Toretto go rogue?
Is this meme already dead?
Nicki Minaj or Remy Ma?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable discussion that always has a fun, diverse panel talking about the stuff we love. Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Hey, Helen Hong.
Yes, J. Keith Van Stratton?
What's the difference between a layover and a stopover?
I have no idea. What's the difference between optimal and optimum?
I have no idea. What's the difference between an actual conversation and a promo for our new show on Maximum Fun, Go Fact Yourself?
Nobody has any idea.
Go Fact Yourself, the game show with celebrity contestants, super smart experts, and answers to questions you've never even asked.
Listen twice a month on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And be in the audience for our tapings of Go Fact Yourself in downtown LA. It's free. Go to GoFactYourPod.com for more info.
We're having a very realistic conversation.
Yes, we are.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.